Good morning. My name is Michael, and I am an alcoholic and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. With me today is Mark, who is also a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is People Helping People. I'd like to thank WHLL 1450 AM for allowing us to share our personal stories about our alcoholism and the solution we have found in Alcoholics Anonymous. The opinions expressed here this morning are solely those of the individuals who express them and not those of WHLL 1450 AM or of Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. People Helping People is focused on how AA can provide help to men and women who have a problem with alcohol. Alcoholics can be helped to stop drinking by other alcoholics who have achieved sobriety and who gladly share it, like the people here today. One alcoholic helping another is the basic premise of the Fellowship of AA. Well over 2.9 million people in over 150 countries follow the AA recovery program. Here in Western Massachusetts, we have over 400 AA meetings a week, with approximately 6,000 members staying away from a drink one day at a time. Alcoholism is recognized by the American Medical Association and the American Psychiatric Association as a disease. It is a progressive illness that can never be cured, but like some diseases, can be arrested. We feel that this disease is a combination of a physical sensitivity to alcohol coupled with a mental obsession. The best short description of what AA is and how it works that I know of is what we call the preamble. I will read it to you now. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. Now, I'd like to introduce my guest, Mark, who will briefly tell us what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And after that, we'll provide some information about how and where to get help.
Hi, my name is Mark, and I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here. I'm grateful to have another day of sobriety. And, you know, I have a sobriety date, and that date is July 23rd, 2017. I have a sponsor. I am actively working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous as it's laid out in a big book. I have a home group, and I have a higher power that's at work in my life. And in my story, from my experience, without those things, I don't believe I stay sober. And I've been taught to tell you in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And, you know, what it was like is I grew up as a kid full of fear. I was awkward in social situations, and most of my childhood, I didn't even realize that that's what was going on. You know, as I got into my teenage years, it became a little bit more acute. I found myself, you know, staying away from crowds, shying away from people, and had this restlessness and this discomfort that I couldn't quite put my finger on. You know, for a while, sports was able to relieve some of that, gave me a sense of community and belonging, but, you know, eventually, you know, you get out of high school like I did and, you know, sports goes away. And for me, because my grades in school and my outlook for my future wasn't all that great, I was resigned to join the military. I'd always had an interest in it. And so I did. And, you know, it was there that I took my first drink. And when I took that first drink and got drunk, that's when I realized that I was under all this pressure. This was pressure that, you know, I had never realized before. I knew there was something, I didn't know what it was, and getting drunk for that first time relieved me of all of this stuff that I didn't know I had going on. And so, you know, I chased that, and I chased it for a really long time. My story is a story of progression. it took me a long time to get into these rooms. And in the beginning, it was binge drinking. You know, it was weekend drinking with my friends. It was doing the things that I thought we were supposed to be doing as, you know, 18 to 22 year olds that were away from home and in the military and doing that thing. But, you know, immediately alcohol started taking away from me things that would not have been attributed to me as a kid. I started to become a little bit more mouthy. I was willing to stand up to authority, which if you're serving in uniform isn't always a great thing, right? You know, you're supposed to obey your superiors. And I would to an extent until I felt, you know, I was wronged. You know, it wasn't until coming into this program of AA that I realized that those were resentments building up in me. So I got into a little bit of trouble. None of it super serious at that time. But for me, they should have been warning signs, you know, but I didn't heed them. So I was honorably discharged and I came home and I started going to college. And, you know, going to college at that time for me, being 22, you know, I was older than most of the kids that were around me. And, you know, I went ahead and I took advantage of that, you know, because I could buy alcohol. So for the people that were around me, I was kind of like the hero, right? I was the guy in the parking lot that always had beer in the car because I could and they couldn't, you know, and for me, that was a social status that I wasn't really used to. And I loved it. You know, it elevated my ego. It elevated my self-esteem. It made me feel like I was somebody, part of something. And, you know, I kept drinking like I thought I was supposed to be drinking. You know, showing up late to class, showing up drunk to class. I had one professor, you know, pull me aside and, you know, he was a pretty aware guy. And, you know, he's like, what's going on? And, you know, of course, my answer was nothing. You know, everything's fine. Are my grades hurting? Well, no, you're doing fine in school. But, you know, he knew that something was up and I was able to meddle my way through college, ended up getting a full-time job with the government. And, you know, the job that I had was, it allowed me to drink the way I wanted to drink because I had learned that the only thing I had to be good at was showing up on time and doing my job. And that I could do as long as you left me alone about everything else. And I didn't realize that in life, you know, that's not always my decision to make. You know, other people have things that they need me to do. But, you know, for a long time, I was able to get away with the hangovers, the coming in slightly late, maybe still drunk even, and not a lot of jackpots because I was good at my job. That was one thing that I would always pride myself on. You know, you could work me to death, you know, and I'll do it. So long as you let me do what I want afterwards. So that led to, you know, some promotions. In the meantime, you know, along this time, I got married. I got divorced. That was a very quick marriage. I don't know exactly quite where that went wrong, but it did. Probably a lot of me. And I took that opportunity to, you know, to drink on that, you know, because there's nothing I like better than having a reason for going out and getting hammered, you know, that helps me justify my behavior, helps me justify everything in my life about, you know, what's wrong or what's right. Maybe you can identify, you know, I can drink when I'm sad. I can drink when I'm happy. I can drink when you're happy, when you're sad. I can drink when life is great, when life isn't great. It didn't really matter to me. You know, there was always something to celebrate or something to be completely depressed about. And my answer was always, it's time to get drunk. You know, I took a couple of hostages in that time period, you know, two people that had no business being involved with me at that time, not realizing in myself that I wasn't capable of forming good personal relations with people. You know, I kept things from people. I lied to people. I did the things that I needed to do to get ahead in whatever arena I thought I was getting ahead in. And so, you know, I got married again. I had two children. That marriage lasted for almost 20 years. And it was a good marriage, by and large. From the outside, it looked fantastic. You know, but on the inside, you know, I had turned into that guy who just couldn't show up. You know, my brother passed away early in life. I couldn't really show up there and be emotionally supportive and be the brother, the son, the in-law that I was supposed to be. I couldn't show up in my marriage because I didn't know how to form that intimate bond with other people. And I looked at the world like it owed me. You know, I had given my all. I had given what I thought I was supposed to be giving, and the world was not giving back to me in the manner that I wanted it given back to me. And, you know, it's, for me, it's you drink on it. And for me, you know, at this point in time in my life, I was, you know, I was in my 40s at this time, and I was drinking every single day, you know, without stop. You know, so much to the point to where, you know, people couldn't, at work, couldn't really identify what was wrong with me. Some maybe knew, and, but I had gotten to the point where I couldn't go a day without a drink. And I don't mean just a drink, you know, it was I drank myself to passing out at night and would find myself waking up 2-3 o'clock in the morning, you know, in whatever chair or couch that I was in the living room, trying to drag myself up to bed. And, you know, that was my life. My health was starting to deteriorate. My heart was not acting appropriately. I would wake up with a racing heart rate. It was thumping inside my chest, you know, not realizing for me that, you know, it's, I needed a drink to calm that down. And so what happened was, although I had been promoted right along at work and I had an awful lot of responsibility, you know, I did something that you're not supposed to do and I got caught doing it. And luckily for me, you know, this is where for me the hand of God comes in. I think someone that I worked with knew that I was in a lot more pain and danger than I thought I was. And this person encouraged me to ask for help. And so I saw that as an opportunity to maybe save my skin, right? I looked at it as a way to get out of the trouble that I was in because I knew that the trouble I was in was ending my career. So I raised my hand and I asked for help. And I went off to a 30-day treatment center. And it, for the first time in my life, I heard someone share their story at an AA meeting, and I identified with that person. And that's this person in life, we lived completely different lives. But she was able to describe my drinking, and I actually identified. And it was at that point that I realized that I had a drinking problem, that it wasn't anger, it wasn't unresolved emotional issues that I thought life had given to me. It was that I had abused alcohol, and it had taken from me. And so I got out of that treatment program and I came back home and I joined a home group, started going to AA meetings, got a sponsor, and I started working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my life since then, it has been really, really good. It doesn't mean that I haven't had problems to solve, and it doesn't mean that life has always given me, you know, rainbows and puppy dogs. But I've been able to deal with the problems that have come at me in life. You know, I've been able to hear other alcoholic stories and identify with aspects of their story. I've been able to use the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. You know, I have a God of my understanding. And to me, that was a new concept because, you know, I was always under the impression that, you know, you took a God or the higher power of your, of someone else's understanding, and that's the rules that you went by. And for me, having that opportunity to have a God in my life that I understood, that I could actually pray to and derive strength from, you know, I've had the miracle of having the obsession to drink removed. I couldn't really nail down for you exactly when that happened, but it's gone. I've been able to make amends to people that I hurt pretty significantly. You know, when I made amends to my mom, you know, you get to a point where you say, is there anything I've left out? And, you know, I thought I had been pretty detailed. And she felt the need to inform me that at a certain point during my drinking, you know, she had removed every picture of me out of her house because she couldn't stand to look at me. And I'll tell you, you know, two things happened to me when that happened was, one, the gravity of the damage I had done in other people's lives sunk in. But then two, the miracle was, is that that wasn't between us anymore. And that I was able to look at her clean without any of those problems, without any of those things that, you know, that would, I would very naturally in the past, I would have just dredged up and made more resentments out of, you know. And, you know, I'm able to look at that woman now, you know, clean in the eye and know that there's nothing between us except love. You know, this is, to me, something that I could have never considered, you know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, you know, because there would have been a battle to fight. And so, you know, I'm busy in my home group, you know, I have a service position. The, my home group keeps me accountable, you know, which is something that, that was unique to me, you know, because I like to live on my own self-will and do what I want. And I've come to find out that, you know, it's, there's greater rewards in serving others, which was a hard lesson for me to learn. Because before, if I served others, it was a matter of, I will serve you so long as there's something in return. And to serve without any desire for anything in return has been, you know, it's been freeing. And so, you know, today, I don't want to say that my life is beyond compare because I try not to compare my life to other people, but I have a very good life today. And it's all to the grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous. And, yeah, I don't know where I'd be without this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Wow, that was a powerful story. I wanted to ask you, let's say I drink when I'm happy, I drink when I'm sad, and I know I have a problem. And I heard you speak about God and a higher power, and I'm thinking to myself, gosh, I would like to go to one of these AA meetings. But I'm not really too into this God thing. I may be an atheist. I may be disappointed in what God has not given me, if I even believed in a God at all. Is AA a religion is sort of the first question I'd have. And can I go to AA if I'm an atheist?
Yeah, so the, you know, my experience has been that, you know, the answer to the first question is, you know, no, AA is not a religion. It's a series of suggestions. And then, you know, number two, of course, you can go to AA if you're an atheist or an agnostic. You know, step two for me, you know, the wording of step two is, you know, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And it, there's no insistence is what I've experienced. You know, I have not in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous experienced someone trying to push a certain belief system down my throat. And that's attractive to me. Because I think if it were otherwise, I probably would have run away.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. So you mentioned the steps. Can you tell me a little bit more about the steps? I know there's 12. And just kind of let me know what that's all about and why there are steps, I guess. That'd be a good question, too, to ask.
Yeah, that's a great question. So the 12 steps, you know, they're referred to, you know, in Chapter 5 of the Big Book as a, here are the suggestions, you know, as a pathway to recovery. And I heard a lot of things when I first came into AA about, you know, the steps are in order for a reason. And, you know, if you're having trouble with one of them, go back to the previous one. And what I found is that the steps are for me in what I've experienced as a series of actions that I have to take. You know, for step one, it's, you know, there's the admittance, you know, in step two, you come to believe. In step three, you make a decision. Step four, you make a list. Step five, you admit again. You know, to me, it's that old cliche of peeling the layers of an onion and getting down to me, you know, because the steps in my life have shown me who I am. And up until I was 51 years old, which is when I got sober, I didn't really know who I was. I thought I knew. Mm-hmm. I had a drunken understanding of what I wanted people to think I was.
Mm.
And working with a sponsor, and my experience has been that you need a sponsor to do these steps.
How do you find, so that's another good question. How would I find a sponsor?
So the guidance I was given when I first came in was you look for someone who you think is actually enjoying their sobriety.
So this means I have to go to some AA meetings first.
It does mean that you, yes, and that was the other thing I was encouraged to do. It was go to as many varied meetings as you can because, you know, you have speaker meetings, you have speaker discussion meetings, you have step meetings, you have big book meetings, and all of them have...
And the big book is?
Alcoholics.
What's the big book?
Alcoholics Anonymous.
So this is a book written by alcoholics for alcoholics.
It is. It is. Yeah. So Dr. Bob Smith and Bill Wilson, back in 1935, two alcoholics talked to each other and started to find a common solution for their problem.
Okay.
And they were able, the both of them, to sit down and hammer out in 164 pages, you know, a guidebook for recovery.
Nice.
And it's a, you know, like the onion. The longer I'm sober and the more I read it, the more I get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, considering myself a smart guy at one point in time, I could have read that big book and said to you, yeah, I understand everything in it. And with just a, you know, a little over 2 years sobriety, I can look back at and say to you now, I had no idea what was in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can read it now and just pick up even more about recovery and about how to stay away from a drink and how to live a happy, sober life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And can I ask, how many meetings would I have to go to if I was interested in joining Alcoholics Anonymous?
So, you know, we have a tradition that the only requirement for membership in AA is a desire to stop drinking.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, I would say that it would depend on the person, on how many meetings. You know, for myself, I went to a meeting once a day, every day, probably for the first year. Because, you know, because I was suffering, I was scared, I didn't know what was going on, I didn't understand.
Did you have physical problems, too? I know that a lot of our listeners who may consider themselves alcoholics might have physical. I know you talked in your story about what the doctor had said.
Yeah, so I had started, during my active drinking, the last few years of it, I had started to hallucinate. I would see and or hear things that weren't there. I would get points in time where if I had started drinking too early in the day, I would start uncontrollably shaking for no reason. So much to the point, at one point in time, my son thought I was having a heart attack.
Wow.
I was simply trying to bring the dog for a walk, and I came back shaking uncontrollably. And, of course, you know, what I said to him was, you know, I'm cold. You know, and it was July. And, you know, the other thing was the racing heart rate. You know, I would suffer from these heart palpitations that made it sound like the, it made it feel like my heart was going to jump out of my chest. Night sweats. You know, I would wake up at 2-3 o'clock in the morning having sweat all over whatever it was, the bed, the couch or whatever. So, yeah.
So was this before or after you quit?
This was before.
Before you quit.
Yeah.
And then can I go? So let's say I'm having those symptoms. Can I still go to an AA meeting?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
That would be a good question that I would have. Good. And one last question would be this notion of a home group. Tell me a little bit about what that is.
So when I was looking for a home group...
Does that mean a group that you go to every week, one group, the same group over and over again?
Yeah, it's a group you're committed to.
Okay.
You put yourself forward for membership to that group. Usually there's a process of either telling a chairperson or another group member. Most meetings, I think almost all meetings, there's usually a point where they recognize who the group members are currently, and that if you desire membership in that group, you speak to one of them. And then, yes, it's the accountability factor. Lots of groups meet just once a week. And, you know, for me, my particular home group, you know, they meet every Monday night. And so my obligation to them is to be there on time, to help out with what's asked of me if need be, to stay close to them. It gives you a place to go where they know you. Not that other groups can't, but it's where you're personally accountable to help set up the meeting, to help break down the meeting.
I see.
You know,
let's say I'm afraid of that. Can I just go to any AA meeting?
Of course.
Great.
Of course you can go to any AA meeting.
I thought I would throw that out. Well, listen, I really appreciate you coming in to speak with us and to tell us your story today. And I want to thank WHLL 1450 again. And before we go, I'd like to also make the audience aware of two AA committees that are available to the general public and to the professional community. They are the Public Information Committee and the Committee for Cooperation with the Professional Community. For more information, please call our Western Mass Intergroup at 413-532-2111 or write to them at Western Mass Intergroup, 474 Pleasant Street, Holyoke, Massachusetts, 01040. We can also be found in your local telephone directory or online at westernmassaa.org. If you or someone you know is experiencing difficulty accessing an AA meeting, please contact our Accessibility Committee at 413-378-3752. And for more information regarding Al-Anon or Alateen, please call 413-782-3406. These are both 24-hour open lines. Thank you for listening, and please remember, you don't have to stop drinking alone.